Hello, everyone, and welcome to Neutral Game, your friendly fighting game podcast. I'm Six Detmar of Scanline Media.
And I'm Yudro Kovacevic of Real Soviet Bear Enterprises.
And with all the fighting games coming so fast and frenetic this year, all the great stuff that's coming out, it's been hard for us to cover everything, just because, you know, I mean, what all have we had? We've had Dragon Ball FighterZ, we've had BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle, we've had Pocket Fighter, we've had Mario Tennis Aces. And so basically we've kind of had to do some divide and conquer tactics here in order to cover all the stuff we want to conquer. And I should have said cover for that second word. And I don't know that we're conquering this game so much. But so this is a game that we're going to be talking about this week that you have been the one that's been playing it. And I've mostly just been watching from the outside. That game, of course, is the Eureka Maid Fighting EX Lair.
Yes, or Fexel, as it's called now.
I feel like I've heard some people saying that it should have been Flex, that it should have been a Fighting Lair EX. I feel like Fexel is really fun to say.
It is. I like it.
But here's the big question, of course. What is Fexel?
So, Fexel is the latest game from Eureka, who are probably most well known among fighting game folk, but for Street Fighter EX. And Street Fighter EX was a 3D Street Fighter game for the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2. And it's a weird one because essentially Eureka was made by ex-Capcom people, most notably the lead designer on Street Fighter 1, Street Fighter 2, and Final Fight. And, you know, they branched out and made their own company, and they approached Capcom with the idea of, hey, we'll make a Street Fighter fighting game for you, but we want to put in our original characters, and we want to keep the rights to those original characters, so that they can build up their own cast, because they believed a strong IP is very important for a game company. And Capcom agreed to that. So Street Fighter EX was born, and Street Fighter EX was half classic Street Fighter cast and half original cast. Probably most people don't know the characters, but, well, for example, Scalomania gets brought up fairly often, and he's probably the most popular from that series, and he is actually an original Eureka character, not a Street Fighter character. So anyway, there were three Street Fighter EX games, one for the PlayStation 1 and two for the PlayStation 2, I believe. And after that, there was also a arcade-only fighting game called Fighting Lair, also made by Eureka, and that had fully original characters, save for two characters from Street Fighter EX, non-Capcom ones. And now, I don't know how many years later, like 8 years later, or maybe more, 12 years later, I'd have to check. They released Fighting EX Lair. And yeah, that's a pretty like tight budget retro fighting game, and we'll kind of like go into more details why.
So, I guess I have two questions then. Well, I guess one statement, one question. The statement is, so this is their first fighting game since then. Like, they've made other games since Fighting Lair in arcades, but this is their first fighting game in, like, a decade.
Yeah, they were primarily a production company, so they would be hired by other video game companies to do the production part on projects. So they worked on a lot of games, but they didn't, like, make all those games in-house.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And then the other question I had was, you said that Fighting Lair had like a different cast of characters than Street Fighter EX, right?
Yeah, I haven't played it myself because it was like a Japan arcade only fighting game. But I believe only two characters from Street Fighter EX made it into it, and everybody else was just fully original.
So does that make the cast of EX Lair a mix of the two? Like, it's some from the arcade and some from Street Fighter EX?
I think so far everyone's been from Street Fighter EX. I don't know how much they hold the rights to fighting later characters because that one was published by Namco, so I don't really know like how that works.
I see. I see. Okay, that makes sense. I was just curious because I had always just thought of it as like fight. I always thought Fighting Lair was just like, oh, we took our EX characters and made them in an arcade game. I didn't realize it was a new cast.
I thought that as well until I looked it up fairly recently, and yeah, it's just two characters from Street Fighter EX. I'm not sure which ones, but yeah.
So, I mean, as far as like this developer who hasn't made a fighting game in a very long time, and ever s and since that's happened, since their last fighting game, there's been a renaissance in fighting games. We've had a whole lot of design innovation and a lot of changes, and I feel like the genre's kind of spread back out because everything sort of narrowed back down because after, you know, the sort of the crash of the genre, there wasn't as much variety because people weren't making as many fighting games. And now we're making a lot more again, and so there are a lot of different styles of fighting games out there. And like comparatively, like how does Fexel play?
So Fexel plays primarily like Street Fighter EX, which is essentially you have three punches, three kicks, and then your standard Hadouken, Shoryuken motions, and all that jazz. Like a lot of the moves are pretty much from Street Fighter characters. But the pacing is much faster. I'd say it's somewhere like between Third Strike and Street Fighter 4, but more leaning towards Street Fighter 4. So it's fast, but like not super fast. And it's very meter super oriented. Like there's a lot of supers flying around. There's a lot of flashes. You can cancel into a super basically any time. So it's a lot of canceling normals into supers, specials into supers, and even supers into supers.
Having watched some myself, let me know if this phrase is too ridiculous to stand by, but does the phrase explosive footsies work?
Yes, because if you can hit confirm a footsie into a, like you can hit confirm a footsie into a special and like into a super easily, and then because you can combo supers into supers, you can basically get a full combo. So it's a very like neutral game focus. Like it's very one person waiting to get in, and as soon as they get in, they just unleash an onslaught of moves.
Very neutral game focus. Sounds like we're the perfect people to cover it.
I guess.
Crickets. All right. So I guess like I'm not familiar with like I didn't play Street Fighter EX. I've seen some of these like I've seen a little bit of gameplay. I know like Kairi, who's just like a mix of Ryu and like Batsu from Rival Schools, basically. But like for the most part, I don't really know this cast, and I'm curious how like characters handle in this game, both from like individual characters, like their move lists, and also just sort of the general toolkit that this game gives characters.
It varies a lot from character to character. Some are pretty much copy pastes from Street Fighter, in my opinion. Like Kairi, like you said, it's prime mostly Ryu. But then there are characters that have a lot of moves. Like let's say Darun Meister, like he has essentially Zangief's moves, but he also has a lot of weird stuff like a parry. For example, like he can parry moves into like counter hits, counter grabs. He has anti-air grab specials and other weird stuff like that. And then you have characters that just aren't too thematically focused. Like Scalomania is very aesthetically focused, because he's pretty much a Power Ranger style like Sentai character, but his moves are a aerial grab, slide, headbutt, a delayed projectile that he shoots into the air and then falls later, a raging demon style super grab, a point blank reversal bubble explosion. So he doesn't feel like he feels like he has just a lot of things for the sake of it. And then you have someone like D-Dark, whose only moves are throwing out a whip at different distances, throwing out an anti-air whip, and setting explosives. So it varies a lot. Some characters are very focused, some characters are very versatile.
I see, I see. And so, does that add up to there being a certain feel in how the characters, like, interact? Like, I don't know, I feel like... Like, okay, in BlazBlue, there are characters who are an exception to this, but I feel like generally the game becomes very, like, pressure-focused. There's a lot more, like, up-close, like... It's not sort of a long-distance, like, footsie dancing so much as it is, like, getting in and, like, controlling space. Whereas compared to, like, a Street Fighter 4, I feel like there's a lot more, like, full-screen play in Street Fighter 4, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get what you mean. There's definitely a lot of it here. It's kind of hard to talk just about the characters without talking about the Gogi system, because I'd say that the way your character plays is around 70% dependent on the character choice, and then the other 30% is the Gogi deck you pick. So you can have a character that's not as versatile, but that then those tools become extremely strong even though they're limited, or a character that's very versatile but has to play in a very focused manner because of their Gogi deck choice.
All right, well, we'll have to dive pretty deep into Gogi system after we finish with character talk. I mean, like, are there any specific characters that you feel like are standout designs, or?
I before Street Fighter V came out, I basically wanted to get into the game under the condition that they brought in Skullomania, and I kind of knew they wouldn't bring Skullomania back. And it was one of those low-key requests. We had a very vocal minority who was all, oh, give us Skullomania. But then when they announced this, and they announced Skullomania, I basically just went, okay, I'm getting this game instead. And that character clicked with me, because I played the original Street Fighter EX, and I played Skullomania a lot. Simply because I like his aesthetic, and I like how he moves around, and I actually appreciate the thematically loose collection of abilities and moves that he has. But I also played a bit of Blair, who is the exact opposite. She has, like, three moves that are very focused, and that's, I believe, an uppercut move, not exactly a Chun-Li-style kick, but more along the lines of several sequential kicks, and I think an anti-air knee jump. So she had a few of those moves, and I liked her, but I definitely couldn't grasp her as well.
I see, I see. So, like, I'm thinking about it more. I've heard talk about Skullomania a lot, and I have done some thinking about his move set. And I wonder if maybe, like, would you say his move set, since it doesn't really connect together, there's not very much synergy. Is it kind of like you know, the Sentai hero who has a tool for every situation? Is that sort of the philosophy?
I think that's more along the lines of what he is. Generally, his, like, move thematic would be he moves around a lot. He is definitely more mobile than any of the rest of the cast because almost all of his moves displace him. The jumping grab has him lunge forward, the headbutt has him spiral forward, the slide has him slide low. So all of his moves give him additional movement. So I would say that's kind of the theme of it. But if you look at them, you know, individually, it's very hard to kind of gauge the theme.
I see. Okay, that makes sense. And this game, so it has classic style fighting game inputs, you know, your quarter circles and all that good jazz that you're used to from the Street Fighters, from them streets and their fights. But it also has something called the progressive input system, which I don't feel like I fully understand.
So the progressive input system is, at least for all intents and purposes, I think the default way they want you to play. I think the classic system is only there for old players of the Street Fighter EX games. Because when you're picking a character and you're picking the deck and the color and the controller input method, progressive is always a default option. And how the progressive works is instead of doing a motion and then a button, what you have to do is from neutral, you have to press a direction plus a button at the same time. So instead of doing down forward punch to do a projectile, what you have to do is you have to press forward and punch at the same time, kind of like Smash Bros. But one big limitation is that you have to do it from a neutral position. So let's say you dash forward, so you press forward to run. If you want to do the projectile from that dash, what you have to do is you have to let go of forward to return to neutral direction and then press immediately forward plus punch. So you will then do your dash into a projectile.
So, I mean, it's interesting to think how that, like, in that force neutral would affect a lot of characters' gameplay. Does it feel like there's anyone that benefits by the classic system? Like, there are any characters who would be more effective in classic than in progressive?
I'd say grapplers. Like, without a doubt. I can't remember exactly what the input for the grapplers was. Like, how they simplify 360s, but it is ridiculously easy to grapple somebody. So they benefited the most, and there's no damage scaling like that. And the game doesn't go, oh, you're using progressive, well, you're going to do less damage now.
Is there anyone who benefits the other way, though? Like, is there anyone who is less effective in progressive than they are in classic, you think?
I don't really think so. Like, the only way you would have issue with progressive is if you're very used to motion buffering, like you're used to basically doing input buffers to cancel into specials and stuff like that. If you can only play like that, then yeah, definitely. And if you're playing on a stick, I've heard people say that classic is much easier to use. But in general, the only real limitation of progressive is you have to move back to neutral, but that only really means you have to let go and repress the D-pad again. And while it's weird and it takes some getting used to, you know, you only have to go back to neutral for a single frame, so you don't have to, like, you know, let go completely. It doesn't make combos impossible.
Okay, so it's not too bad.
No.
All right, well, in that case, I guess it would probably take a little adjusting to, but it certainly does seem pretty powerful, especially, as you say, for characters like grapplers.
Yeah. I mean, I very appreciate it having the progressive system, because I'm playing so many fighting games this year that just learning the motions for every single one gets ridiculous. So when I find a new fighting game that goes, oh yeah, we have very simple inputs, that's just, you know, a massive plus for me. That means I'll try it out.
Cool. So let's talk about the Gogi system. You referenced it earlier as far as it being one of the biggest elements in defining how characters play, like that extra 30% that defines how they act. What exactly is the Gogi system?
So the Gogi system is a mandatory set of abilities you have to pick. And it's a set of 5 abilities, and they come in Gogi decks. So there's no matching individual abilities to make your own deck. It's more like, hey, here are 12 decks, pick which one you want to be equipped in your character. And these individual decks have sets of abilities that are thematically put together. So for example, you have a aggressive Gogi deck that says, hey, you do more damage, hey, you can start doing chip damage, hey, you get more attack and stuff like that. Now, how those things activate is they aren't actually active from the start for most part. They each have their special activation requirement. So an ability may say, hey, you need to deal like 300 damage total, and then this attack boost will activate. Or it'll say, don't get hit by your opponent for 6 seconds, and you can become invisible when dashing. And in general, the abilities go between 2 types, blue and orange. And the general idea is the blue is kind of a passive upgrade. For example, it's usually attack up or throw range up or meter gain up. Or the only one that's the odd one out is one that lets you use hard attacks to cancel projectiles. That's like the only one. But the other ones, the orange abilities, they're generally the good, like, the powerful ones. And they have more, more varied abilities. For example, when you dash, you become invisible. Or you can press up, down, up to jump so that you always land in front of your opponent. Or, you get super armor at all times. Or you can cancel into 6 normals instead of 3 normals. Things like that.
I see. And how much does that, like, affect... I mean, like, you said the 30%, right? That's about how much it can shift a character's gameplay. And obviously that's depends per character. That's an average.
Yeah.
But, like, what's an example of how that can affect how a character plays and change their style?
So, for example, if you are playing... for example, there's a deck called Nightmare. And that deck says, when you knock down an opponent, if you're next to them, you drain their super meter. And then later what it does is, after you have drained a certain amount of super meter total, it says, as long as you're next to your opponent, you will drain their health. And how that works is, if you have that, you will go for hard knockdowns so that the opponent is down and you're right next to them. So you'll generally try and go for mix-ups to make sure that you can push them down. And then when you get the health drain ability, you will go for, grabs and other moves that keep the opponent locked into you for an extended period of time. So that can kind of change your game plan in general. For example, you can play a character passively and defensively, but if you pick, the deck that benefits from being aggressive, like it says, your normals do chip damage and you can chain together 6 normals, but those ability requirements require you to play more aggressively, then you will play that character far more aggressively even if they're defensive, if you want to activate those abilities.
Sure, that makes sense.
And it also works the other way around. For example, there's a deck that gives super armor to the opponent, but the unlock requirement for that is, after you have been knocked down 12 times, you get super armor. So in that case, if you know the opponent has that, then you try to avoid going for hard knockdowns so you can delay when they get super armor.
I see. So it also, I mean, obviously, I guess it makes sense that it would become a tactical consideration for your opponent and how they end up fighting you.
Yeah.
Because it's just visible at the bottom of the screen what you're working with, right?
Yes, and the opponent, you can see your opponent's deck at all times, like online or offline, it's visible, and you're allowed to know what they picked, and you can even see the progress towards unlocking it. So if something says, oh, you need to do this 12 times, the meter will slowly fill up as you fulfill those conditions.
So there are currently 15 decks. If you get the more expensive version of the game, we'll talk about that stuff in a minute. And all of them can be used with any character. There must be some broken combinations in there.
Yeah, there are. So, in general, the best deck I've seen for the Fire and Forget pick, like, oh, I don't want to bother with this, just let me pick something, is a deck called Double Face. Which says, if you lost your previous round, in this round you get super armor, or if you lost your previous round, in this round you get chain 6, which is chain together 6 normals. And that one rotates as you win or lose throughout the entire match. And it's very problematic because you're guaranteed to get it, because you are going to win or lose a round. There's no way going about it. But those abilities in their respective decks, like when they're normally appear, the super armor and the chain 6, their unlock conditions are get knocked down 12 times or chain together 15 normals, and those are both things that you can fail to activate towards the entire match. So this is kind of like you're guaranteed to get this, and there's no real drawback. I guess the only real drawback is that it doesn't super synergize with the rest of the abilities in the deck, but it's whatever. And the other combination I've seen that was ridiculous was a deck called Phantista or something like that. I can't remember the exact name. That's a reversal deck, and it buffs itself the more you do reversals. Like, it gives you stacks of bonuses, and those bonuses either increase the damage of your reversal or increase how much meter you gain. And people have been using that with a character that has an extremely damaging super projectile and has a special dodge move, so she, like, flips backwards, and that counts as a reversal if you do it in Wake Up. So essentially, you just keep flipping as a reversal, as a response to anything your opponent is doing, and you're just building up stacks of it. So instead of having, you know, 4 or 5 stacks in a match of that, you have, you know, 12 stacks of it, and you get ridiculous super meter gain, and then you can just keep shooting your hyper arrow super.
I see, because with that one, the damage buff stacks the more you do the reversal.
Yeah. So it's that was the most ridiculous thing I've seen so far, and it's extremely easy to do as well. But there are definitely combinations, and I know some of the decks in the beta were ridiculously overpowered, and they nerfed them into the ground, so I'm guessing there will be a lot of balance patches in the future.
Have there been any yet? Do you know?
I think there have been some very minor tweaks, but nothing noteworthy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. I know they've got some characters and stuff coming, so I'm sure they'll do tweaks when those come out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess, like, the most basic question is, like, would you recommend this game? Is it, like, do you feel like this is an accessible fighting game? Because it feels like it's a callback to an era of fighting games that has passed. It's a very, like, has very much the spirit of PS2 fighting games, and I mean that as a positive, mostly, but also, those games could be kind of impenetrable at times.
So this game is very much how people remember retro games being. They kind of nailed the feeling of PS2 era fighting games, or PS1 era fighting games even. It's almost like if you took the original Street Fighter EX and just put in high-definition graphics on it. And I played them actually back-to-back during the beta, and it's kind of like that Shovel Knight syndrome, where it feels like you remember the games, but they're not, like, entirely one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that in a good way. And it has a bit of that, I don't want to call it jank, but you know, like, how games like Old Tekken or Bloody Roar or Fighting Vipers or whatever Rival Schools felt? Like, they felt very, like, sharp animations in terms of, like, they're very fast, they're very immediate, and everything kind of floats.
Like, crisp almost to a fault.
Yeah, like, very crisp, and when you want to juggle somebody, they fly very high up, like that kind of style.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah.
So, it's very retro in that regard. I don't think people make fighting games like that anymore. Now it's much, it's much more fluid, I'd say. But I think this is good. I don't think it's a bad way to make fighting games. It's just something you haven't seen. It literally feels like they just continued where they left off during the PlayStation 2 era. So I'm gonna say I don't think it's like as impenetrable as the old games were. I think it's especially with the progressive system in the Gogi deck, it's very easy to jump into.
Okay, cool. With a game like this, where I feel like there probably isn't as much of a, I mean, there definitely isn't as much of a community around it as there would be as a game like Street Fighter or even like BlazBlue or something, right? This is a pretty small community, I think. It would be really essential for the game to have, like, quality netcode so that you can actually get some matches in. Because I doubt you're probably going to find a local in your area. So, like, what's the netcode like? How's the online experience?
In general, it's been pretty good, I'd say. I've had a few very laggy matches, but I've also had, like, I would have a laggy match with somebody from the UK, who has 4 bars with me, but then I would have a flawless match with somebody from Turkey who had like two or three bars. So I think it's just mostly dependent on that person's individual connection. Like, the matches felt all right, and even when it was laggy, there were very few, like, unplayable matches. So I'd say the netcode is good. It's very hard to judge because usually I use our connection as a benchmark because we know how each game works in under our conditions, so we can compare them to each other. I guess the bigger problem is the catch-22 of there. It doesn't feel like there are enough people online.
I see.
And it's also very hard to say that because, you know, you say, oh, there aren't enough people online, and then people go, oh, well, I don't want to get it then, and then people don't get it, and there aren't enough people online. So it kind of loops itself.
And that's also something of a region-specific thing, right? Like, I assume your matchmaking tries to catch other people in Europe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe in the US it does better, maybe in Japan, so depending on your area, you might want to look into it.
Yeah, it could be that. I think if you can figure out what the busy time is, you can do well, because what happened to me was, because I streamed it from 10 p.m. to 12 p.m. or midnight my time, what would happen is, the first hour and a half, it would usually be okay, and then after that it would die down. As people, I assume, went to bed.
I see.
And frequently I would get matched up against the same person over and over. And I think people mostly play ranked because the lobby system isn't really that good or intuitive. But when it worked, it was fine. I think there will be more activity as they release new characters and more people get into it. Because a lot of people I've seen online are skeptical about it. Like, oh, like, how like, alive is this game, or is it worth it at this price point? But they're slowly rolling out updates and announcing new things, and people are getting more into the idea of getting into the game.
Mm-hmm. And how, like, what's the base price point on this game like? Like, what are the like, sort of the, you know, the MSRP, you know, the recommended, like, retail stuff?
So the,
I know this game doesn't have a physical copy. It's just digital.
It's just digital. So I believe I bought it on the Swedish store, but I believe it's something along the lines of you have a light and a standard edition. The light edition is $40, and the standard edition is around $60, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is the standard edition, so the $60 one, gives you access to one additional character, but that character is a old costume version of an existing character. So it's like, it's the same moveset and everything, it's just a different model. And it gives you access to more Gogi decks. I'm not exactly sure how many, I believe it's like
10 more.
10 more. It's 10 more. Yeah. So I'd say that those 10 Gogi decks kind of make a difference. Depending on which character you decide to play. I think the base ones are alright, but if you can, you should probably get the standard edition, and if you're not able to, you'll still be fine with the light edition.
It might be a little easier than normal for you right now. This episode, I'm hoping, is still going to go up on August 5th, at least in my time zone. And right now, on the U.S. PlayStation Network, until August 14th, there is a sale going on. The light version is $22, and the complete version is $40.
Okay, yeah, for like $22, it's like a no-brainer.
In fact, it's such a no-brainer that while we were recording this podcast, I bought it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. No, like the light version is just, like, for $22, yeah, this game definitely, like, without a doubt. And for $40 for the, like, full Gogi set, I'd say that's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went for the complete myself, because at $40, it's like, well, yeah, I'll go ahead and pull the trigger. We've been talking about it a bunch, and it sounds pretty cool to me.
It's a very good side game. I think that's kind of, like, my main recommendation. If you're playing some other fighting game as your main thing, this is a very good game on the side, because it's really fun, and if you don't take it extremely seriously, it's easier to get into it, because the Gogi decks seem very unfair at the start. You're kind of like, oh, why does this character get super armor? Why does this character get this ridiculous ability? Like, that doesn't make sense. And it doesn't help that it kind of feels like the Street Fighter X Tekken gems, and people really hated those. So I suggest, like, pick this as a side game, don't take it too seriously, and when you actually see how it plays under those conditions, then you'll actually understand, oh, the Gogi decks are more like, you know, my weapon loadout in this situation. It's not actually a pay-to-win or, like, an all-to-win thing.
And the game is going to get even more exciting and more bang for the buck because we've got a bunch of upcoming content, it seems.
Yep, they have confirmed two DLC characters for end of August, start of September. That's their time frame. And they have teased two more characters from the Street Fighter EX games and one guest character, surprising everybody with Terry freaking Bogard from Fatal Fury.
So are all of these characters free? Or, like, I mean, I know some of them are. Do we just not have confirmation on all of them yet?
So the two coming up end of August and September are definitely 100% free, like they have said that. And they have only teased the three characters. They have not said whether they are, like, purchased DLCs or not.
I'm going to go ahead and bet that there's no way you're getting Terry Bogard for free.
It probably depends on their arrangement with SNK, to be honest. Because I know in Tekken, all the guest characters are paid.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, is I feel like it's very likely that when you're getting someone else's character, the deal that you're making is usually that you're going to give them a piece of the pie, and so there's probably going to be a new source of revenue.
Yeah. But, yeah, the developers did say that as long as there is interest for the game, they will continue updating it and adding new stuff for it. And so far they have, you know, stuck to that. They have announced two characters because in their eyes or on their finance report, the game has done well enough for that.
Nice.
And in general, I think everybody who has played it has had a very good impression. It's a very tough sell when you're just watching it or when you just see it, like you watch a random gameplay video, because it looks very janky in that case, or like, you know, old school in a bad way. But I was streaming it for like once a week for a full month, and a lot of people have told me, oh, like, after watching your streams, I went from, I don't really care about this game to I really want to get it, or I really want it on PC so I can get it.
Yeah, I think it kind of wins you over. I think the Gogi system is a lot more interesting and more, like, adds a lot more flavor to the game than you would initially expect. I think the different character designs are nice, and also just having a fighting game that feels, like, has such a different feel than what you're used to. You're used to these, like, recently all the, you know, as a, like, anime fighters or, like, Street Fighter style, and this is a forgotten, almost, style of fighting game. The feel is very distinct, and it's a really nice change of pace.
I think the main problem is that we have basically studio feels. When people describe fighting games, they say, oh, like, this is definitely an Arc System Works game, or this is definitely a NetherRealm game. Or, you know, this is definitely a Street Fighter style game and things like that, or a Namco 3D Fighter. And then a lot of the indie games or the smaller games feel like they want to recapture the feel of more successful games. So, you know, you'll have Skullgirls feel like Marvel because of that, things like that.
Totally.
And this is pretty much the only instance I've seen ever since the fighting game renaissance, where a fighting game just went and said, oh, we want to go for the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 feel. Like, nobody does that, and in that respect, this is the only game on the market that does it successfully, and in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good point about indies, like, trying to, like, you know, obviously doing their own spin on it, but, like, trying to feel like another game.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Mike Z going on record and saying, when, like, asked what was the design vision of Skullgirls, like, early on, he said, oh, fixing Marvel. So, yeah, it's, this is definitely has its own identity, and I don't think, the closest you can compare it is to Street Fighter, but even then, you know, if you play Street Fighter V and then this back-to-back, they feel completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I won't say there's no comparison, but the comparison falls apart as soon as you get your hands on and you're like, oh wait, no, no, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's everything I got here. All the questions that I have, is there anything else you want to tack on the end here?
If you can afford this game, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's a good thing to have on your system. It's a very good game when you have friends over and you're like, oh, what do you want to play? If you want to play something where the skill floor is fairly low, it's a good thing to have on hand. And if you're not convinced or it's not your thing yet, or you can't get it, I suggest just keeping an eye on it because... if it does well, it feels like it's going to be here for the long haul. So definitely keep an eye on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think Eureka waited all this time to put this game out just to be like, well, I guess fighting games aren't for us. It seems like they're pretty committed.
This is definitely a passion project, and it's very easy to see that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this is our this is a podcast, and that means podcasts have plug zones. So at the end, Miadrag, is there anything you would like to plug?
So you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MDKII, that's MDK Roman numerals 2. I usually have not terrible tweets. And you can also find me on twitch.tv/realsovietbear, where I stream games, 4 times a week usually, and depending on my connection and other stuff, I also do fighting games, so you can check that out as well.
Awesome. So if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at sixdetmar, that's SIXDETTMAR. If you want to find some of the work I do, there's a little bumper at the end of the show. And I want to give a quick shout-out to the AS Rock FM2A75 Pro 4 ATX FM2 motherboard for actually working this time, because we had to toss out a recording because it randomly disconnected my mic.
For a moment, I thought you got a sponsorship deal that I wasn't aware of, but okay.
No, I'm just happy my motherboard did its job this time.
Also, if you're listening to us on iTunes, or if you're listening to us anywhere, and you can go to iTunes, please leave us a review if you liked the podcast, or if you did like it, because those things help.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, like, even, again, if you didn't like it, feedback helps, because, like, We're just out here podcasting. We're playing fighting games and we're talking about them. And if you have thoughts about things you want us to cover, things you think we should do differently, we'd like to hear that, and we'd like to make a better show for you. All right. Well, with that said, thanks so much, everybody, and I think we will see you next month.
Bye.